Hello, and welcome to another fascinating issue of Charlie Cook's Insider Club audio programs, jam-packed with the most realistic, practical, and up-to-date money-making secrets. Your host is Charlie Cook. Charlie has been helping business owners attract more clients and maximize their profits for over two decades. And while most people were still trying to figure out how to use the web, Charlie sold his second website for just under $1 million. Today, Charlie is one of the most sought-after business mentors on the web and a best-selling author, recommended by some of the top marketing and sales experts of all time, including Brian Tracy, Tom Hopkins, J. Conrad Levinson, as well as online entrepreneurs like Yannick Silver. To get the maximum benefits out of this month's program, ask yourself these questions during the interview. How can I apply these ideas to my business and to my life? How can I do things differently and get better results? And what actions can I take today, this week, and this month to reach my goals? And you'll want to listen to the interview more than once. Every time you do, you'll discover new ideas, new strategies, and new ways to sell more of your products and your services. Make more money, and be more successful. Trying to schedule a meeting with a corporate decision maker has never been more challenging. Your emails get ignored, phone calls dodged, voicemails deleted. In this economy, it's become next to impossible to get a foot in the door, let alone the big contracts that you want. What's the secret to selling in this economy? How can you crack the door and get those big corporate accounts? How can you speed up the sales cycle and win big contracts and see your profits grow this year? Winning business in the corporate market today requires fresh sales strategies, not worn-out, manipulative sales training techniques. Her book, Selling to Big Companies, was selected by Fortune magazine as must-read. On this CD, Charlie interviews Jill Conrath. Early in Jill's career, she faced the exact same sales challenges while working at Xerox. Over the last two decades, she's fine-tuned her sales strategies, coming up with a system that won her awards as a top-performing sales executive. Satisfied clients include IBM, GE, Microsoft, 3M, Hilton, AAA, Cox Target Media, General Mills, United Healthcare, Bombardier, Business Journals, eFunds, UniFirst, OpenPeak, and many more. On this CD, Jill shares her proven system for selling to big companies in a tough economy. In just a few minutes, you'll discover how to get in the door and land more contracts with big companies so you can make this year your best ever.
Hello, this is Charlie Cook, and from everyone I talk to in sales, I understand it's tough out there. The easy money has dried up. Company stock has gone down in value, their sales have slowed, and we're in the midst of a prolonged period of stagnant sales. And in the midst of these tough times, salespeople are still expected to go out there and land big contracts to keep profits up. While there isn't any magic wand that I know of that can bring back the trillions of dollars in money that the banks were passing around and somehow destroyed, I do have one person on the line today who has perfected a proven strategy for getting in the door and landing big contracts even in tough times. Today, I'd like to welcome Jill Conrath, the author of Selling to Big Companies. Jill, welcome to the call.
Hey, Charlie. Thanks for having me today.
And before we got on the line, you mentioned a few things just, you know, so everybody on the call knows who your ideas work for and maybe who they don't, and maybe if you could just share some of your thoughts about that.
Yeah, the truth is my book is called Selling to Big Companies, but it could just be called Selling to Companies, you know, from the generic sense. What I talk about is how to sell into the corporate market primarily. When I talk about corporate market, I'm talking about a business that buys things for their own business. And so I'm talking about a business-to-business sale. And when I talk about bigger companies, usually when I talk with people, it's not about how to sell to the corporate giants, you know, the top 100 accounts. It's just how to get a small business to sell to bigger companies and get bigger contracts than they typically, you know, are getting. Because it really makes a difference if you can land a decent-sized client as a small business.
So this is for people who sell to companies, not for people who are in retail selling to end users, but people who sell to companies.
People who sell to companies, right.
Okay. So before we get into the details of how our listeners can do that, how they can sell more to companies, can you tell us a little bit about your background in sales and how you developed your selling system?
Okay. I actually started my sales career many moons ago when I was moved out of education and went to work for Xerox as a sales rep, and I was very fortunate to have that company is the one place that I started my sales career, because at that time they had probably the best sales training in the entire world. So I had a chance to get trained real early on in my career and learn how to do many things right. From there, I moved into sales management and then ultimately moved into selling high-tech products and services. But about 20 years ago, I stepped out of the corporate world and actually created my own small business, which was called Applied Strategies at the time, which is a pretty boring name. But what I did is I did sales training, and I also started working with companies on new product launches. And I specifically worked on the handoff of the new product from the marketing arena to the sales organization, because I wanted the salespeople to be more effective in what they did. And then about the year 2000, what happened is that I lost my entire client base. I was working with two very large corporations. I mean, they accounted for 95% of my work. And they both came under pressure from Wall Street at the exact same time. And literally my entire business was wiped out overnight. So the genesis of what I'm doing today really relates to what I've learned since the year 2000. For the last 10 years, I've been studying the marketplace and what it takes to be successful, and I actually had to rebuild my own business during that time frame, and what I discovered is that things had really changed, and there was nothing on the market to help people sell to corporations today with the skills they needed simply to get their foot in the door and set up a meeting with a key decision maker.
So speaking of change, you know, you've obviously been in sales for not only the most recent 10 years, but many years before that. And I'm sure that over the years you've been through ups and downs in the market and ups and downs in the selling cycles. But for many people who are in sales, they can't remember a period that's as tough as the period we're in now. And for many people, it feels like the rules of selling have changed. So given today's economy, what do you see that has changed in the last 2-3 years, and what are the selling strategies that people should retire? And
well, let's just say, first of all, that a lot has changed, and I would also add that it's never going to go back to what we thought it might be. I did sell for Xerox during the last economic downturn, and I was selling capital equipment at that time, copiers, and interest rates to purchase a copy or to purchase anything were between 18% and 22%. And so it was very, very difficult to be successful selling if you didn't change what you were doing. And what that taught me at that point was that the need to be creative, the need to constantly be open to new ways of doing things and not get yourself stuck in a rut. So that's what I experienced years ago, and did learn a lot of things in terms of what people are thinking as well. When their jobs are at risk, nobody wants to take a risk. You know, so in a downsizing economy, people don't want to make a switch from the status quo. They'll stay with what they have, even if it's not good, because an evil that they know about, that they know all the problems with, is much better than bringing in something that they don't know how it's going to work, because nobody wants to be made a fool of or, you know, have a bad decision in a down economy. So that's where the, you know, this is some of the things that are the same. But what do I see that needs to be gotten rid of? The number one thing that I see is that sales is all about activities. You know, certainly you need activities to drive the business, but sales is really about doing things right, and if you're not doing the right things, you can make as many calls as you want and get nowhere. Whereas if you're doing the right things, you can make significantly fewer calls and have much better results. And so I always tell people that, you know, it's not a numbers game anymore. It's a focus on being a smart seller and targeting the right companies that you go after and having very well-defined messaging when you're contacting these companies in order to get your foot in the door. So that'd be the number one thing I'd say that's really, really that you need to do differently. And number two, I'd say that you have to stop focusing on your product or service. It is entirely irrelevant. And that's really hard for people to believe, but the truth of the matter is nobody cares about your product or service one iota. They simply care about what it can do for you. And if they wanted to learn about it, they'd go online and they'd check out information about your product or service. So The only thing that's important right now is to focus on your customers' needs, their direction, their issues and their challenges, and then how you can help them get where they want to go.
So far we have activities. To just being active doesn't mean that you're going to be successful at selling.
No, all that means is that you do a lot of things wrong frequently, you know.
And you look busy.
And you look busy, and so you need to know that I see this as the number one mistake salespeople are making in organizations and small business, because they think it's a numbers game, and it's a numbers game to a point, because yes, you do have to have more activity in a down market, but honestly, if you're making a bad call and your messaging is bad to try to get your foot in the door, you will never get an appointment with a corporate decision maker, no matter how many calls you make, because what you say stinks.
Or the more non-buyers you have, the more non-business you're going to get.
That's right.
Versus the more qualified buyers you have,
yeah,
the more business you'll generate.
Right, right.
And I think you're right on target in that. And another way of saying it, is in terms of what you're saying about products, or focused on product or service, is that it's not the companies, it's not you, the business owner that's in charge of your marketing anymore. It's the customer.
It is. It's totally the customer, and that's the other thing that I really see that people really need to understand. I spent a lot of time observing customers in the last couple of years, because I think knowing how buyers think is probably one of the most important things that we as sellers need to really understand. And even the buyer's environment. So it's not just that a buyer exists out there with a set of needs that they need, needs, goals, or objectives that they're trying to reach. We also need to consider that the environment these people are in is overwhelming. And if you look at any corporation right now, nobody is staffing up to their needs. So every organization, whether it's a growing company, for example, like a Google, or it's a shrinking company like a General Motors, nobody is staffing up to their needs. And every single person who's an employee in these corporations are under intense pressure to do way too much in way too little time. And they have fewer resources than they've ever had before. And so you're dealing with somebody, for the most part, is pretty stressed out.
That's another great point, that basically the people you're trying to, whose attention you're trying to get, have less of it to give and are totally, as you said, overwhelmed and overstressed in terms of, providing it to you. That three sort of new, things for people should be thinking about in terms of selling. Are there other, what you would call, new rules to selling in this economy?
Well, there's a lot of new rules, and I just like to piggyback still off the what we talked about with the impatient, overwhelmed decision maker. What we need to realize as sellers is that the people we're trying to contact literally are sitting with their finger on the delete button at all times. And they are deleting our voicemail messages and our email messages as fast as humanly possible, because they want to get rid of the trash in their life. And your messaging is so important in order to capture their attention that if you don't get it right, you've got maybe 3 to 4 seconds at the max before they go, not for me, and they delete it. So that,
okay.
I mean, that's so important. I can't tell you how important it is. And finally, the other thing about these crazy busy buyers that we're dealing with is they use the web all the time to do their research. And so they're constantly online searching for things. And the last thing they want to do is have a product-pushing peddler come into their office and eat up their valuable time. So they will go online and they'll search for problems that they're facing. They'll search for information about how other companies are, doing things. They'll search for information about how to achieve specific goals that they're trying to reach. And they'll search for that kind of stuff online, and they'll go to the websites of people. They'll learn, they'll study, and oftentimes they're really quite informed by the time they reach salespeople, and they even know about their products and services, and sometimes in more depth than the salesperson does herself.
Those are some good points about, what's changing the market and some of the implications. And I'm sure we're going to talk more about that in detail as we get into our discussion. But before we do, maybe we can just sort of map out, what you see as the key elements of the sales cycle, and then how people can get started doing it right based on the implications, of the new rules of selling.
Okay. I'm going to take you someplace different than you just asked.
Okay. That's fair.
Sorry to change the game on you, but this is part of the new rules. What we need to do is, instead of mapping out the sales process, we need to map out the decision process that our buyers go through. So it really, what's imperative is to understand how they're making decisions, and then to align what we're doing with that type of thing, with where they're currently at, because depending on where your buyer is at entirely affects how you approach them and the best strategies to use.
Wait a minute, I'm just going to stop you there, because, in fact, that sounds like another new rule, which is the buyer's decision process trumps the sales process.
It totally trumps it. I mean, forget your sales process. Your sales process needs to be based on the buyer's decision process. And if you need to look at your relationship with them, and from the onset, the first decision that they make, the very first decision that they make is to allow you access. You know, that's where most people are stumbling right now. Most people aren't getting meetings set up because these people are overwhelmed and they delete you and they don't want you in their offices because they're so busy. And so the first decision, the thing that you have to focus everything at the front end of the sale on, how do I actually get through to this person so that he or she wants to take a piece of their valuable time to meet with me. So that's the first decision.
Okay.
The second decision, and we'll come back and we can talk about the skills in each of these things, okay? But the second decision that the customer makes is to change from their status quo. And the reality of it is they already have their needs being met to some level of satisfaction. Mostly they're not too upset with who they're currently working with. So a change is additional work. And nobody wants to add more workload right now to their already overwhelmed schedule. So what we need to realize as a seller from that perspective is there needs to be a compelling reason for them to make a change, and we have to engage them in understanding the value that they get from making a change, because until they decide that they're going to change, it doesn't matter what your product or service is at all. They're not, you know, it's like if you just bought a computer or you bought one a year ago and you're already working along and things are going okay, you don't want to switch. You know, if somebody calls you up and says, I want to talk about my new whiz-bang computer, you say, I'm sorry, I'm not interested, everything's happy. But if somebody would be able to contact you and find out that you weren't, or bring in some ideas that would make you unhappy with your present computer, that you were missing out on things because you couldn't do certain things, then you would open your mind to looking at something new. But it has to be something that's of value to you, because you could care less about getting a new computer. Does that make sense?
It makes sense. And basically, what you're suggesting, though, in terms of the psychology, is you need to establish that level of cognitive dissonance in your buyers, so that there's a disconnect between what they have and what you could provide them, and hopefully there's a value difference there, too.
Right, right. So, yeah, cognitive dissonance is a good word. You need to create a gap between where they are today and where they are, so that they see that things could be better, much better. In some way, and it needs to, you need to pique their curiosity during this process, so that they want to learn more, and then secondarily, so that they're willing to go to bat in the organization to make the change happen. Because the bigger the company, the more people involved in the decision process, the more your product or service spans multiple departments. I mean, you have to get a ton of buy-in to get the change to happen. It's not like you're just talking to one person who's affected.
Right, and that's actually, compared to the people I deal with, that's a big challenge, because you have to get a team of champions in back of you to get the deal, usually.
That's right, because unless somebody really thinks it's important to do, the sheer amount of work to drive it through, to do the financial justification, to prove to people that it'll be valuable, the possibilities that it might be a risky decision, you know, especially if you're a small company, you are a risky decision. You know, maybe you can't do it. I mean, I actually lost out on... when I first went out on my own and started my own business, I actually lost a contract to a large competitor, and the client literally said to me, Jill, we absolutely love what you're doing. We think that you are spot on and have the best solution for us. But the truth of the matter is, if you get hit by a Mack truck, we're out of business. So we're going with your competitor.
And you didn't get hit by a Mack truck, though.
No, I didn't get hit by a Mack truck, but at that moment in time, I understood the amount of risk that I brought to bear.
Right.
For my clients, and that I needed to do something differently, because I could not keep butting myself heads on right directly against the big boys, because I couldn't compete head on. So I had to figure out a way to go against the big companies in my industry without a head-to-head confrontation.
In terms of the decision-making process, we have getting access, creating that perception of a performance gap.
Yeah, I call the second one, you have to get, the second decision that they make is the decision to change.
And
then the third decision is they select the resources.
Okay.
And this is when they become interested in your product or service. You know, it's the only time that they're really interested in it. Anything before, it's just about the business decision. At this point, now they're interested in learning more details about what your company provides. And so that's when your focus becomes on the product or service. But if you come in talking about your product or service too early, you're going to be deleted in their lives. They're going to, you know, dismiss you, send you into the dreaded D zone is what I call it, where you're dismissed, deleted, delayed, deferred, whatever.
And my model for that is basically it's like walking somebody up a set of stairs.
Mm-hmm.
If you take out the first two treads and expect them to get to the third one, you're going to have a problem.
Real problem.
And in this case, you know, if you want the third one, the selecting the resources, and you've neglected to do the first two levels, they're never going to make it.
Yep, they won't. They're going to fall into that gap and disappear. And you're going to wonder what happened to you because you were just, you know, doing what you thought was right. But the truth of it is what's right varies based on where they are at in their decision process.
So in terms of the decision process, what's next? Is there another step after that?
Well, there certainly is, and that would be the expansion step. And once you get your foot in the door, how do you get more business with them? But I really don't deal with that in my work. I really, my expertise in the areas that I really love is the front end, getting that first order.
Okay.
You know, getting the first sale within a company. That's what I love to do.
So let's talk about those first three steps and
yes.
what people need to do to get through that seemingly impenetrable barrier of that, you know, everybody seems to throw up around themselves in a big company.
Right. We could spend the whole rest of the time talking about that because it's that important. Most salespeople are doing, salespeople, entrepreneurs, small business owners are doing terrible things. That is literally the biggest problem that I see. And for the last 5 years, all I've been doing is working with people on how to get their foot in the door and have a good first meeting because, honestly, 50% of the meetings, you know how hard it is to get in? Well, 50% of the meetings that you have, salespeople aren't invited back for a second meeting because they screw up that first meeting so badly.
Let's take a step back here, which is in terms of getting the foot in the door.
Right. You know, that's critical.
In terms of thinking about change, my experience is that before you're going to get somebody to adopt the new strategies that are hopefully going to get the foot in the door, they may have to stop doing the things that are preventing them from getting their feet, you know, getting in the door. So what are the, you know, things that they should stop doing so they have room in their schedule to replace it with the things that you're going to tell us they should be doing?
They should stop making endless calls to clients giving that same old spiel that they are giving right now. They should stop it immediately because it's a stupid thing to do. It's not working.
All right. And what else?
They need to stop talking about their products or services.
Okay.
They need to stop splattering their prospecting efforts and focus on a specific target market or type of customer. I mean, that's just an essential. And they need to stop winging it. They need to be thoughtful and prepared far beyond what they think.
Maybe you can give us a specific example of somebody you've worked with or the hypothetical guru, hypothetical student of yours who is doing it right. What would be the steps that they should be taking to get in the door?
I need to start with where they're going wrong, okay?
Okay.
Let me tell you what I typically hear people do, and this is where most people who are listening today will be at. They will decide to call a list of companies. They'll have this list of companies in front of them, and they'll pick up the phone, and they'll typically leave a message like this: "Hi, Bob. This is Jill Conrath calling. I'm the new account executive from XYZ Sales Training Company. We specialize in offering a full range of training programs for all your salespeople's needs. I would love to get together with you and share, you know, find out how you're handling your sales training and then share with you what we're doing in that area. I'd be glad to meet you at your earliest convenience," and then they'd leave their phone number. So if I can go back and dissect that, I think it'll help people.
Okay.
Okay, because this is what most people are saying, and they're saying it because they think it's the proper thing to say. It's nice. It's gracious. It's, you know, it's explaining who they are and what their company does, and it's not being presumptive, and, you know, it's very nice. But it's grossly ineffective, and people are deleted about the first sentence or two with a message like that, which is why they're not getting messaging. So let me just start. Hi, Bob. This is Jill Conrath calling. I'm the account executive with XYZ Corporation. Now, as I listen to that, and again, I have to sit in the role of decision maker, and I hear that message, the thing that immediately pops into my mind is, oh, my God, a salesperson. They get deleted. I'm the account executive for XYZ Corporation, or I'm the new rep for this company, or I'm the president of JillConrathCommunications.com. You know, so it's just like they're, let me tell you who I am. And then everybody goes into, we specialize in offering. Now, most small companies want to sound bigger than they are. So that's why they throw in a full range of services to meet all your needs. Now, again, just stopping and listening to that from a sales, from a buyer's perspective, because all that counts is how the buyer hears it. Now, what we want to say, you say, I specialize in offering a full range of services. They go, oh, God, this is a salesperson. We already have our needs taken care of. And they, you know, delete you because they don't want to talk to somebody, by the way, who's a generalist. They like to deal with specialists, somebody who really knows a lot about some things as opposed to a whole, you know, a full range of things that they offer. The next thing that salespeople say that's really grossly wrong is, I'd like to set up a time to meet with you to find out how you're currently handling your sales training needs and to share with you what our company is doing. And that's wrong because you are asking a decision maker for a half hour maybe of their time to learn about their company, and they're so busy, and the last thing they want to do is spend their time with the self-serving salesperson. So that in itself turns them off if you've happened to make it this far in your conversation with them. They don't want to waste their time to tell you what's going on wrong in their company unless it's really, really horrible. And then when you say, I'd be glad to meet with you at your earliest convenience, I know you're really busy is the underlying message, then they think you're a peon because you're willing to jump your hoops to see them. And they want to deal with professionals who are really, you know, who have competence and who are strong in what they do. So everything that most people are saying doesn't work. Everything.
So I've got to stop using that message.
Well, only if you want to be successful. I mean, if you want to make a lot of calls and you get paid for making a lot of sales calls, then you keep using it because, you know, you can make a whole lot of calls. You probably won't have any customers, but you will have a whole lot of calls that you can get done in an hour's time.
So what is the message people should be?
Well, the message really is, you know, as I see it, is really broken into three parts. And I do explain this real well in my book. And, you know, if anybody wants to take a look at it, they can see example after example. But the reality of it is you have to immediately sound like you're a colleague to these people. And so it's a whole tone of voice. It's a whole way of talking that's fundamentally different. If I were using, again, the same, you know, I'll go back to me and the sales training company, I would probably say, hi, Charlie, Jill Conrath calling. 651-429-1922. I was just noticing on your website that your sales decreased 22% in the last quarter. I'm sure you're under intense pressure to make some real differences in your organization, to make some real change. I have some ideas on how you can increase revenue. Let's set up a time to talk. Again, this is Jill. My number is 651-429-1922.
And you've done a great job there of hinting at providing a solution, creating a perception of curiosity without sounding like you're selling.
I didn't sound like I was selling one bit, right?
Right, exactly.
And if, say I got a person on that phone and I said that exact same message. You know, most people tell me about all the objections that they're running into. Oh, this is another thing. You don't want to learn how to handle objections. You want to get rid of objections. That should be your goal because objection handling techniques dig you into a bigger grave. So the reaction if somebody says, you know, we offer a full range of training, sales training services or whatever, the company will always respond with something like, we're already working with XYZ firm or we don't have any needs right now. That is the exact response about that. However, if I said, I understand that your sales, are down 22% in the last, quarter, and I have some ideas on how you can drive revenue. I'm sure you're under intense pressure. I didn't even say what I did, so there's no way they can say, we're already working with XYZ training company. They can't answer that way because I'm not talking about, I'm a sales training company.
But what you've done there also implies that to leave the message, you need to have done your homework.
You can't not do your homework if you want to be successful. And most salespeople think they can wing it. And then they say, well, I don't want to write a script or anything. Well, the truth is, they're using a script. It's just a bad script.
And my experience is the more you can actually customize your message to the prospect, the more likely you are to get the return call or get the conversation.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things that I say to people all the time is that there is a price of admission into companies today, and you have to invest in them ahead of time. And by investing in them, you have to do your homework, and you have to learn about their issues and their business. You have to know about their company, or you have to, if you're calling on smaller businesses, you'd want to know about the typical challenges that these businesses are facing. But you have to have a rich knowledge base that you leverage, because it's not about your product or service, it's really about the business impact, and you need to understand it, and you need to know how what you bring to the table, your product or service, affects their business issues and challenges.
So in addition to leaving a message on the phone or trying to get in the door with a phone call, what are the best ways to get in the door?
The reality is you need to use a multi-pronged approach. And I would suggest email and voicemail as a 1-2 combo pack, where you might start out with a phone call, and in your phone call you'll say I'll send you an email with a link to some information that might be valuable to you. Or you send them an email first and you'll say the same thing, I understand your company was, sales were down 22% in the last year, and that you're probably under extreme pressure. I know that this is really important. Here's an article that you might want to read, and you direct them to someplace on your website, and then you say, I'll be calling you to set up an appointment. So you kind of go back and forth and back and forth on a regular basis.
And what role does persistence play? And when is it the right amount? When is it too much?
When is it stalking?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what people are afraid of. They don't want to seem like a stalker, or they don't want to seem like they're a pathetic loser, by calling all the time. First of all, I would say that if you've done your homework, you will realize that there are certain areas of the business that you can impact, and the reality of it is that when you know you can make a difference, you have a different feeling about contacting the account that you're going after. So it's not just you're trying to sell them something, you know you can make a difference. Secondarily, based on people's attention span today, you can assume that if you called on Tuesday and they deleted your message, which they will, if they haven't called you back, you can assume that you have not registered in their long-term memory bank because they just deleted you so fast. So you can call back 2 days later and leave a fresh message, or one that's similar to the one you left before. You don't want to leave an identical message. You might want to alter the value proposition that you're sharing in it. You might want to alter the context of how you learned about their business or what you know about the industry challenges they're facing. But essentially, you can do, at least twice a week to go after a company and leave a message.
And you haven't mentioned other vehicles. Are sales letters a good idea? What can people do on the web, social media, et cetera?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things. I mean, the truth is you need to think about all the sorts of things, and I think it's a package that you have to put together. You can map out a whole campaign, and you really should for each account. And the truth of the matter is when you're targeting some of these accounts, you should be doing just about some of the same things every time. And you might want to, if you notice, I said in the email that I would send them a link to an article. So then you're using your website as a tool to help you sell. But the article, what place you're sending them is not, let me tell you about our cool products. It's an article on the top 7 ways that are preventing, small business owners from reaching large corporations. Or it might be an article on 3 strategies to increase your sales to high-tech companies. It could be a webinar. It could be your blog post that you've written. You can go on their blog post and you can comment on their blog post. There's just so many different things that you can use and so many different ways you can get your foot in the door and so many ways you can contact with them that you should use them all, because you don't know which one will work best with somebody from the outside. And after about 10 attempts, I mean, most people will stop after three attempts or five attempts because then they'll feel like they've reached the pest point. And, you know, the reality of it is it's taking 10 attempts, 10 touches right now, minimum, to get in to see a corporate decision maker. And in some cases, the higher level decision makers, it can take 12 to 14 touches, contacts, you know, through multiple medium. And so you just need to keep implementing it.
But the fundamental model, I think, that you're talking about is from the traditional sell the product model is instead of sell the product, is to provide helpful ideas, provide a promise of potential. So you're selling to the hope that they can be saving time, saving money, making more money, whatever.
Whatever it is, right.
Whatever
drives their boat, you know.
Right. And that's the best way to get in the door.
Right.
So
it's the only way for a salesperson to get their foot in the door. I mean, the truth of the matter is nobody in their right mind would waste their time with a product-pushing peddler. You know, somebody wants to come in and tell them about their products or services. They want to meet with competent people who have done their research, who can bring value to the meeting itself, not find out if they can sell them something.
Mm-hmm. So there's a reason I know you don't do B2C, but that Fuller Rush doesn't sell brushes door-to-door anymore?
Well, you want to talk to a Fuller Brush person? I mean, I hide in my closet if I see him coming. I don't have time, and I don't want them, and they're trying to sell me something, and I so know that, you know, and it's, you know, people come door-to-door trying to convert you in religion. I mean, nobody wants to interact with somebody who's, you know, chasing them down. We need to get out there online, extend the invitation, you know, put good content on our websites, have very information-rich websites that somebody who, you know, is our customer would want to spend, you know, like 10, 20 minutes on because they found such good information.
Let's say we're lucky after, you know, the 10 to 12, maybe 14 contacts, we get in the door. What's the key to leveraging that meeting and or getting the follow-up meeting?
Here's another major disconnect. And it even happens, by the way, and I'll go back to when you actually get a human being on the phone for the first time, because you will sometimes talk to somebody. And if you've got a good positioning statement like we just talked about, you know, like, you know, I've learned this about your company, and I've got some ideas on how you can. When you do reach a person, they'll say, well, that's interesting. Tell me more. And at that point, most small business owners will think, oh, he wants to learn about my company. And they'll say, well, our company was founded in 1995, and we have an office in St. Cloud, Rochester, Minnesota, the Twin Cities, and we've also got one in Duluth. We have 27 employees, and we offer a full range of services for all your sales training needs. We've trained people in negotiation skills. We've trained them in prospecting skills. We've helped them develop large account maintenance plans, and we've helped them put together their marketing programs. We do it all.
Sounds like an old spiel.
So they go into the spiel because they think that the words, tell me more, means tell me about your company. But the reality of it is the words, tell me more, means give me an example. And so if you've said you work with companies to shrink time to revenue on new product introductions, which is what I did for many, many years, then if, you know, Charlie, if you would say to me, well, that's interesting, Jill, tell me more, and I'd say, well, let me give you an example, Charlie. One of my recent clients was a large technology firm like yours, and they were launching a new product into a new market segment. They didn't know a lot about this customer base, and they were a little unsure about how to do it. So what we did was, and here are some of the problems that they were facing, and as a result of working with us, they were able to get their product up to speed in 3 months instead of the 6 months it typically takes them. And then the decision maker will go, oh, we probably need to meet. But they won't meet if you say, we offer a full range of services. We like to partner with our customers. We're passionate about our customer service. We love what we're doing to death. You know, they don't want to meet you then, only if you talk about an example of how you help somebody.
And basically what you're doing there is you're taking the intangible services, whatever services you offer, and you're making them tangible so people can understand what the heck it is you might do for them.
That's right. And the story is the driver. And there's no way that you can can, on the spur of the moment, under pressure to perform, because there, you know, you got this one moment in time where you either make it or break it with this prospect. There is no way that you can intelligently tell your story unless you've planned it ahead of time. I mean, what really happens is the seller gets nervous and then they start blathering and they go on and on and on and they throw in all these stupid details that are irrelevant and they bore somebody. So you need to really focus on how do you give a story, how do you give an example of what your company has done and how you've helped other companies. And you need to practice it and be able to say, in very conversational tones, Charlie, let me give you an example.
And it would seem the extension of that, the same thinking, is that the closer or the more examples you have so that you can have one that's the closest to their industry niche, their particular situation, the better, because many times customers have a hard time seeing that what you did for somebody else will work for them unless that other, you know, company is just like them.
Right.
So
if you've worked with other medical devices companies, you know, then you would say, in working with other medical device companies like yours, one of the key issues that they face is how to deal with the changing regulatory climate. Every time there's a new legislation, you know, legislation passed, then this kind of stuff all happens, and it slows down, and, you know, and you tell the story about the problem first, and then you don't give them the whole story about everything you did to fix it, but just basically, you know, when we worked with them, we did a couple major things, and as a result, here's what they achieved.
So we're getting a little shorter time here, and I have a couple more things I want to get to. But there's one sort of key thing that I'm sure some of our listeners are thinking about, which is, okay, I've got them in the door, hopefully. I've given them an example of how we can help them. How do I move from there to getting them to sign up to the, quote, close?
Okay. Well, first of all, we're not going to the close first. We're going to get a meeting. And so once you do the Tell Me More story, you would ask a question that would say, you know, for example, I gave the example of new product launch. I would say, what are the challenges you face in launching new products? Or how is your company handling this type of stuff? And then they give an answer, and I would say, let's set up a time to meet. I've got some things that you might be interested in that might help you with that. So you need to plan the question, too. Now you've got the meeting, and if you're going after bigger companies, which is what I talk about, the bigger companies where there's multiple decision makers, you need to know right from the get-go that you are not ever, ever, ever going to close a sale in one call. So you need to stop thinking that you need to share everything with the client on the first call. And you need to think, what do you need to do on the first call, the first meeting with this prospective client, to have them be interested in exploring working with you in more depth? And when you first come in, if you remember, we've set up the meeting from the standpoint of, I've got some ideas on how to shorten time to revenue, or how to speed up your production line, or how to reduce your overall total cost of ownership of something. So I've got some ideas. Then the meeting has to start out again on the idea focus. And it would be the you know, Charlie, thanks so much for meeting with me today. As I said on the phone, one of the things I really want to talk with you about is how to reduce time to profitability on new product introductions. You know, we talked about this, and I shared that story of working with XYZ company. I just want to give you one more example. And the truth of the matter is, Charlie, I have a lot of questions I want to ask. But first, I just want to share this example so you have a context of how, you know, how we help companies achieve their business objectives. So you start out, you share a story that shows your expertise, that you've worked with other companies similar to theirs or people with similar challenges, and that you've achieved results. Now you've got two stories you've got to have. And then you have your questions prepared ahead of time, and you need to have questions that are thoughtful questions in terms of not qualifying a prospect, but actually finding out how they're currently handling things, and if how satisfied they are with them, and if they'd like to achieve, you know, what things they may have in place to try to help them achieve their goals. So that's your first meeting is really focused on that. The goal of the first meeting is the second meeting, period. And the second meeting is to explore things in greater depth or to meet with other people in the organization who may have information or who may be interested in what you're talking about. The goal of the first meeting is always a second meeting. Now, this could be a meeting on the phone. The first meeting could be a meeting on the phone, too, because I see that happening a lot nowadays. People don't even want to invite you into their offices for the first meeting. It's kind of like they want to screen you on the phone the first time. Mm-hmm. So that may be a first call. It might be a webinar on the phone or an actual in-person meeting. But what you need to expect is that it's going to take at least 3 to 5 meetings within a big company, so you don't want to give out everything in your first meeting. And again, a lot of people want to spread out their goodies. They want to play Santa Claus, dump everything that they know and they can do. You know, oh, we offer all these services. Look, and they throw out brochures like crazy, you know, like slap them on the table, and they're leaning forward, and they're all excited to show all their product and services, and the buyer is going, oh, God, this guy's all over me. You know, they don't like it. But if you hold things back and you say, I only need to focus on getting another meeting. Another meeting means that they have to be interested in this. We have to explore the problem. You don't need a brochure on a first call. And, in fact, I call most collateral these days, I call it collateral damage, what it does, because it actually turns you into a salesperson as opposed to a person who is a business professional.
And much less if you don't have the collateral, it gives you an excuse to have another contact with them.
Oh, yes, you got that too, right. That's exactly right.
Well, we're obviously there's much more, you know, to share and much more to learn from you. And at this point, I think we're going to have to wrap it up because we are running out of time. But maybe we can just walk through if somebody, you know, wants to tap into your knowledge, use your system. Obviously, the first thing they can do is to get a copy of your book, Selling to Big Companies. And
correct.
That's available everywhere. I mean, on Amazon.com or...
It's on Amazon.com, any of the online stores, and also Barnes & Noble.
Let's say somebody buys that, they love it, and they want to take it to the next level. How can they get more of you?
I do a lot of things for small business owners, and I think the biggest thing that people should do is they should go to my website to start out with. It's really an information-rich website because I follow and practice my own, you know, what I preach. And there's a lot of excellent articles that people will find on how to sell to big companies. And if they sign up for the newsletter, which is free, then they also get a free sales call planning guide, which will show them how to set up an actual first meeting with a client so that it's worthwhile and gets you where you want to go during the course of time. So that would be the number one thing that they should do. If they work for a small company, my business model is not set up. I don't do coaching, you know, for small businesses, but I do have some CD programs that are excellent and can really make a big difference. And they're on my website as well, and they should check those out. I specifically designed them for the small business market who wants to go after the corporate market. And so, I mean, they're not for an IBM rep who's had a gazillion, you know, hours of training. They're for somebody who's running a small business, maybe a consultant, a salesperson for a small business owner wants to target and go after the larger corporations today. So they can just check on my website and find. I have a 12 CD set, one that's out right now on getting into big companies. I've got another one coming out shortly called the Sales Stimulus Package.
Excellent. And the one thing you didn't mention is? Your website address?
Oh, duh. SellingToBigCompanies.com.
Oh,
exactly,
very
exactly as it sounds. SellingToBigCompanies.com. Plural. Companies, not business. Big companies.
Okay, easy to remember. So SellingToBigCompanies.com. You can sign up for your newsletter there. People can also then learn more about your CD programs and potentially also purchase them there.
They can, and there's a ton of articles. There's other things that they downloads, audio downloads. I mean, it's just I have a lot there because I want to make it a valuable site for the small business owner.
Great. Well, Jill, it's been great talking with you, and thank you so much for taking the time to join me today.
Hey, thanks so much. It's been fun.